It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fly gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
And welcome to The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire, where we are in Celtics land, surrounded by rainbows, sunshine, and pots of gold. Welcome Matt right now from San Antonio, where things are not quite as cheery. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. Appreciate joining us for the program. What a difference two games can make. And here's the comparison I'm going to use. Game number two, after game two of this series, the Eastern Conference Finals, when Celtics lost by 44, and it felt like the final score was even closer than the actual game was, despite it was one of the great blowouts in the history of sports. It felt like game three of the American League Championship Series, Red Sox-Yankees 2004, where the Yankees won 19-8 at Fenway, and that game didn't even feel that close. And then it was just over. I mean, everybody was resigned to the fact it was over. You know, maybe the Red Sox would win a game, and, you know, another season they'd lost to the Yankees. And this was kind of the exact same thing. And I am not by any stretch of the imagination saying that the Celtics are going to come back and win this series at this point. But it just has that same feel where it all just turned around in that game. And the Celtics, I don't always agree with Charles Barkley said, but he said after that game that he was proud to be an NBA player after seeing the way the Celtics competed. Because not only, you know, do they lose by 44 points, they're down by 20 points in the third quarter of that game without Isaiah Thomas, and they refused to give up. I thought it was amazing.
I agree. It was absolutely amazing. Probably, I mean, I hate to say it, but probably the most impressive win I've seen, at least since I've been in the NBA, just to be able to come back from a pounding like they took in game two. And then game three, it's not like you took it at their place and you're coming back to your home court.
Right.
They're going on the road in game three after being absolutely embarrassed on their home court.
Without your best player.
And without your best player, and you go down big in the first half. So to show that kind of character to fight back and claw out a win the way they did was incredible.
And, you know, Brad Stevens said it, and he was right, that even though they were down by 18 points, you liked the way the Celtics were playing. He liked the way the Celtics were playing. And he thought if they continued to play that way, they would have success. Cleveland hit a sick number of three-pointers. I think it was 9 three-pointers in the first quarter or something like that. And he had a feeling that if they just kept going, they were going to have success. And that's what took place. I mean, Cleveland took the foot off the gas. I think that's pretty clear, particularly on the defensive end. The Celtics made some changes, particularly with their offense. It became much more of a motion offense rather than Isaiah with the ball up top, getting double teamed and looking to create. The Celtics looked really, really good in that game. And now, obviously, they've done everything that they needed to do at this point. They have surmounted all odds to win one game, and now they can get a little greedy in this series and make things interesting. They could turn up the heat on the Cavs. I still think, obviously, at the talent level, the Cavs will, when they need to make plays and they need to play better and with more intensity, they will.
I agree, but there's pressure for the first time this whole playoffs on the Cavs.
Yes.
This game, if the Celtics can somehow defy the odds again and win, then the series is back on track and they have home court advantage in the best of three going into game five. So,
and momentum.
There's pressure on the Cavs to win this game. Now, obviously, they have one of the best performers under pressure in the history of the game leading the charge in LeBron James, and he's been in this position countless times before. But nevertheless, just for the Celtics to get that game three win and put that pressure on them here in game four, give themselves a chance in this series is very exciting.
Right. And, you know, I think, you know, the mindset of me and a lot of folks in the media looking beyond this year was that the Celtics postseason was already a success going into this series. And regardless of what happened, whether they were swept or not, Boston was going to be a destination spot for, you know, free agents and individuals who had the ability to, who had no trade clauses and the ability to waive those no trade clauses, would want to come to Boston, you know, based upon, you know, the Celtics' trajectory, their cap space, their draft choice, and all that. But, you know, I think that they needed to win also to preserve that feeling and philosophy amongst free agents because, you know, if I'm an NBA free agent and I watched, you know, the Celtics in game two against the Cavaliers, I'm like, well, maybe this isn't the place I want to go. Maybe they're a lot further off than I thought they were. Look at this. They're the number one seed and they're getting embarrassed on their home floor. They're a laughingstock. And I think that it was really, really big for the Celtics to win game three to, you know, reset and ease the nerves potentially of a free agent who is going to come here.
Yeah, and that big picture organizational, cultural perspective is absolutely true. You know, no one wants to go out getting swept and then on top of that have to deal with a loss like that on your home court. I agree with you. It's about pride, and they played with pride, obviously, in game three to get that shocking win.
So believe it or not, Matt, now after that win, it's been brought up by Boston.com, Chad Finn, that perhaps the Celtics are better without Isaiah Thomas, and that Marcus Smart's performance has made Isaiah Thomas expendable. I am going to say right now that is hilarious. It is ridiculous and hilarious at the same time. If anything, it proves that, you know, the Celtics' philosophy in how they were using Isaiah Thomas in the first two games of this series was faulty. You know, he was injured. He had the hip injury. He re-injured that in game six of the previous series. He gutted it out in game seven. And, you know, I think that the type of offense that they ran, the motion offense where the ball swings and you create opportunities for multiple number of guys, which I think means the same thing, to shoot three-pointers or to create off the dribble, I don't know why they weren't using that before with Isaiah, because I think Isaiah benefits from that, particularly when he's getting double teamed the way he was. And, you know, the Celtics' philosophy in the first two games of Isaiah driving the lane, drawing three guys, and then trying to make a miraculous play wasn't obviously the best.
Right. And you know, to everybody's point, your point, whoever wrote the article's point, there's no reason you can't have like a hybrid two-pronged attack. That's basically what the Spurs have done the last 2 years, where with the starters are in with Kawhi and LaMarcus, it's more of a traditional NBA ISO, you know, get those balls to those two guys in mm-hmm. their spot so they can make plays and make things happen. And then when the second unit comes in, it's like a completely different style of play, completely mm-hmm. different ball club. You bring in Manu and Patty, and the ball's zipping up and down the court, and you get that Spurs ball movement and pace and a little bit more frenetic style of play. And it's hard for teams to adjust to that. And in both instances, you're playing to your team's mm-hmm. or your personnel's strength based on who's on the floor. You know, as far as forcing that style of play, when you don't have the personnel or it doesn't best suit the personnel that's on the floor, I don't know. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. That's some, you know, Brad Stevens knows better than any of us talking about it or writing about it.
Truth.
But you know, the Marcus Smart thing, look, he plays his butt off every night. He competes. He does all the little things, but to depend on him to go 7-for-10 from the 3-point line on a nightly basis so you can crack 100 points and win games.
When he shot 25% for his career.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet on that.
Right. I mean, Marcus Smart is, in my view, one of the great closers in the NBA right now. And he is because of the way he defends and rebounds and makes plays, the way he gets his hand in and creates steals.
And offensive rebounds.
He hits shots sometimes, but his strengths, I mean, he is, as I've said many times, he is a Draymond Green type presence on the floor, where his intangibles make him into, you know, a extremely valuable player. But let's not kid ourselves that he's going to shoot, as you said, 7 of 10 from 3, and he's going to score 27 points. Isaiah Thomas has proven that he can score 27 points in a game over and over again. So I don't see why it has to be one or the other. I mean, it never makes any sense to me. Like, as an example, the draft is coming up. It's either you trade the pick or you keep the pick. Why? Why do you have to make that decision right now? If somebody gives you, if you're Danny Ainge, and why do you make a decision you're going to keep the pick? He's not. I don't get it.
He said all along he's not.
Right.
There's no
Which
rush.
Makes perfect sense. Gonna, There's no rush. Why do you have to? Why do you have to tell everybody I'm keeping the pick?
Yeah, he doesn't.
Right. But fans want him to do it, and even Wick Grosbeck said, "Oh, we're going to keep the pick." Why? Why are you telling people you're going to keep the pick? You look to see if you can trade the pick, and if you can't trade the pick, then you keep the pick. I mean, I don't get it. If a great opportunity presents itself, you do it.
Yep.
That's life.
You know, it's something for fans and the pundits, which you and I are, or I am now. I'm a pundit. We talk about it. We write about it. Fans, you know, call-ins, or if we ever did call-ins, they'd probably call in and give their 2 cents. It gives everybody something to talk about, but that doesn't mean anything to Danny Ainge or anyone else in the Celtics management, whose only task is part one, gather as much information as possible so whatever decision you make is the most informed one, and number two, what you think is in the best interest to help your ball club win games, balancing the short-term effects with your long-term effects. Right. And they don't care what I'm saying, what you're saying, what anybody's writing, and that's an important quality to have when you're managing a professional sports organization.
Right. I mean, you know, the Warriors don't have a lot of picks moving forward. Let's say they lose the Cavs in the finals. I think rather than stating I'm going to keep the pick, maybe I make the call to the Warriors and say, hey, you got 3 guys. You're only going to be able to pay 2 of them after next year. What do you think about this number one pick? And I take one of your guys off your hands.
Yeah, I'm really having to bite my tongue from making an obvious and easy joke about making big picture management decisions based on what the media says. But I think you get my drift.
Right. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And Danny Ainge knows what he's doing. Danny Ainge has done a phenomenal job. And I don't think any...
Amazing.
Yeah, I don't
Amazing
think anybody job. Should be... Everybody can talk, that's fine. But to say Danny Ainge has to do this or has to, I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. This is the Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. We're going to take you chronologically through the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll hear from Al Horford, interview with him. Also, Chris Webber from TNT, who for some reason is not in the Hall of Fame yet. Dude's got 21 points per game and 11 rebounds for his career, and he's not in the NBA Hall of Fame yet. I guess that's going to happen at some point in the future, but hasn't happened yet. But Chris Webber is coming up just a little bit here on the program. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. This segment of the show brought to you by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, their team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. Visit revisionenergy.com to schedule a free consultation. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? Well, we're going to chronicle the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference Finals really over the last week with their Game 7 victory last Monday night against the Washington Wizards. The next night, winning the NBA lottery. It was a tremendous week of ups and then some significant downs for the Celtics before another up on Sunday night as the Celtics won Game number 3 of Eastern Conference Finals in very improbable fashion if you watch Game 2. And even this game, where the Celtics were behind by as many as 20 points in the third quarter. But the Celtics stood strong without Isaiah Thomas, who's out for the remainder of the postseason with a hip injury. And behind, really, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, Al Horford, Kelly Olynyk, and also Jonas Jerebko hit some big shots and made some big plays down the stretch. Celtics won in Cleveland, 111-108 on a buzzer-beating shot by Avery Bradley. So the Celtics won 111-108. Bradley with 20. And Marcus Smart with 27 points starting in place of Isaiah Thomas. First, here's Avery Bradley on that game-winning three.
I think it was the play call by Brad Stevens. He did a great job of putting us in the right position, forcing them to have to help and not be able to switch. And Al Horford made a great screen, and Marcus Smart made an even better pass, and I was able to knock down the shot.
Celtics head coach Brad Stevens talks about Marcus Smart.
You know, if he goes through a funk at some time in March, shoot yourself out of it, and we believe in you, and let it fly. Because in this moment, you know, when we needed him the most, he made huge shots.
He also said the first half, where the Celtics were down by 18 at the half, didn't reflect their performance to that point.
We were playing way better. We were getting good shots on offense and playing with great purpose. And on defense, I thought we were much better than the score indicated. So I think that when you play better, you feel better, and you just kind of stay the course.
Cavs head coach Ty Lue says it just fell apart for them.
I thought early in the third quarter we really, you know, started playing decent, you know, and then it just kind of was a snowball effect. We had a few turnovers. Marcus Smart made 7 threes tonight, you know, so, you know, I just didn't think physically we were, you know, as physical as we needed to be defensively.
Kevin Love said the Celtics deserve credit.
We knew they were going to come in, be professionals, and, you know, they always play hard. I mean, they got down, you know, and that had a lot of fight in them. So, you know, that's how nice we got to be able to close out the game and let one get away.
LeBron James scored only 11 points in this game and turned the ball over 6 times.
And I had a tough game, period, not just in the second half. Me personally, I didn't have it. You know, my teammates did a great job of keeping us in the game and building that lead, but me personally, I didn't have it. You know, so, I mean, that's what I got to say about my performance.
Cavs center Tristan Thompson, who continues to impress me more and more on a game-in, game-out basis. He is a legit star in this league. Says the Celtics were clicking.
No, first of all, I got to give Boston a lot of credit. You know, they moved the ball exceptionally well tonight, especially with IT out. You know, whenever you haven't played home in, you know, half a month, you know, you want to come out and pull a, you know, full 48 for your fans and for yourself personally.
All right, Tristan Thompson right there. Now we're going to go through the Celtics' amazing week in chronological order, beginning with Game 7 against the Wizards. Last Monday night, Celtics find themselves in the Eastern Conference Finals after punching their ticket to the finals for the first time since 2012 with a 115-105 victory in the TD Garden. The bench, the defense, Isaiah Thomas, the big stories for the Boston Celtics. This one, IT, with 29 points. It's more a facilitator than a scorer, but he hit 2 big threes. The Celtics overcame a mini 6-point deficit in the third, never looked back, as Kelly Olynyk, Isaiah Thomas, the defense of Marcus Smart were all huge down the stretch. Kelly Olynyk finished with 26 points for the Celtics. We'll start with Brad Stevens talking about that second unit, which was not just Kelly, but included others as well. They outscored the Washington Wizards 48-5 and included 13 points from Marcus Smart, 9 from Jaylen Brown, who we'll hear from in just a little bit as well. But the second unit behind Kelly Olynyk, key for the Celtics in getting the Eastern Conference Finals. Here's Brad Stevens.
I thought our guys did a great job. Obviously, Kelly gave us that enormous lift of scoring in the fourth quarter, but really in the first half as well, having 12 at halftime on 5 of 7. And then I thought Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart were really good.
Isaiah Thomas said he spent his time leading up to Game 7 looking at some classic games.
I mean, all night last night and today I watched 2008 Paul Pierce versus LeBron and how special that game was. Two superstars going at it, guarding each other. And it was a historic game. So I definitely did my studying.
Jaylen Brown had a huge impact for the Celtics, coming off the bench, making big plays, hitting shots and alley-oop at the rim, and a great pass from Marcus Smart, where he laid it in a rebound in which he was falling down and rebounded the ball on his back. Jaylen Brown, top draft choice of the Celtics in the 2016 NBA draft, really has found a key niche with this Celtics team and is growing into a player that will contribute in a big-time fashion moving forward. I talked with him after the Celtics win in Game 7.
What did it mean you have these kind of signature plays that he was describing in this spot and to kind of help the team and have your fingerprints on a big win?
It means a lot, but I mean, we got a lot of work to do. We got the Cleveland Cavaliers next series. So now we got to do it again. Now I'm on to the next. Now I'm focused on them. Focus is on that.
How do you feel that this experience of this series and also Chicago series is going to help this team moving forward against Cleveland?
It's going to help us a lot. You know, I think we've had to play different styles because we've had different matchups, but it's going to help us a lot as a unit, you know, like being able to come back and being able to be on the road and win games and stuff like that. You know, I think it's going to help us a lot.
What do you think tonight did for you, you know, specifically in terms of your confidence and kind of your trajectory becoming, you know, the player that you want to be?
I mean, it helps a lot, you know. Just like I said before, just being here, coming from high school and then going to college and then being the number three pick, I mean, it was an adverse situation. I had to fight for everything I got. Nothing was really given to me when I came here. Every minute, like, I had to fight for it. So I wanted it like that, you know. And it could have been fine to go to a different team and play 30-plus minutes, but I would have rather been in this situation any day of the week, you know. Having a chance to play in the Eastern Conference Final, like, I mean, having a chance to play in the Eastern Conference Finals against LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers and being on the team that has a potential to go to the finals, man, I'll take that all day. I mean, I'd rather win than lose any point in my career. So just to be where I'm at, and it's a blessing. I can't complain. And I just want to win.
Playoff basketball is all about the intricacies, too. And how much has that helped you as well in kind of learning the game and that aspect of it, of, you know, doing the right things that it takes to be a winning player?
I mean, it's helped a lot, you know, just experience. The more experience you get, the better you get, the more comfortable you get, et cetera. So just being in the role that I've been, I've been trying to take advantage of it, and I think I have. You know, like I said, every minute I got this year, I had to fight for it. So nothing, Brad didn't give anything to me. The organization didn't give anything to me, and I appreciate him for that. I have to keep fighting. I'm still fighting, so. I wouldn't pick it any other way. I'm happy to be a part of the Celtics going to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Also caught up with Amir Johnson, one of the key veterans on this team, one of the team leaders as well.
Just describe for this group what it's like to be going to the conference finals. It seems like, you know, there's that sense of accomplishment of what you guys have done, but obviously also the feeling that there's still much more to play.
Absolutely. It's big time, man, to be the last, you know, four teams playing. It's definitely a hell of an accomplishment, especially when a lot of guys counted us out, man, and this team is just resilient. Got a lot of fight, a lot of hard-playing guys, and you know, it's definitely an honor to make it this far.
That seems to be the big theme, and whether it's, you know, Kelly Olynyk being counted out and stepping up in this game, Jaylen Brown having to fight for each minute to get on the court this year and making a huge accomplishment. And everyone obviously talks about Isaiah and talks rightfully so, but this team is obviously much more than that.
Yes, the thing about a team, man, yeah, any given night, you know, any guy can step up, man, and score the ball, and that's what's special about our team. You know, I mean, it's just not one guy. You know, everybody plays well. All the way down to Joe Green, to Tyler Zeller, man, who were able to give a big boost. You know, and our coach does a great job, you know, just finding ways to get us opportunities and win games.
How much, you know, pride do you take in seeing Kelly have a game like he had, or Jaylen have a game like he has? It seems like that's something that really brings you a lot of pride. Because you work with these guys, and it seems like this team's kind of beyond even, you know, team. It's like a family at this point.
Absolutely, man. Just staying ready and being hungry, man. Just recognizing how badly we need these games. And Jaylen Brown and our guys stepped up big for us and had great games. You know, seen the whole Gonzaga Kelly out there just doing his thing. It seems like nobody couldn't guard him out there. And Jaylen Brown is just playing hard every possession, and that's what we need, especially when you're a rookie. You know what I mean? All you can do is go out and play your heart out, and they're just giving us great minutes.
What's the challenge with Cleveland? Obviously, they have the ability to dictate matchups, but it seems like this team can also kind of react and also dictate matchups as well.
For sure. You know, we're going to look at film tomorrow. I'm going to enjoy this one, you know, and just see what type of matchups we can match up with them, or then again, if they can match up with us, you know, it's going to be a chess match, knowing they're a good team.
Celtics were overmatched in game number one. Brad Stevens, after the game, mentioned something I thought was pretty evident, that LeBron James, despite the fact that he is 32 years of age, has been in the league since 2002, continues to get better, and he looked the best I had ever seen him, which is saying something. I think he's the greatest player of all time. On Wednesday night in game one. He looked the best I've ever seen him. He was making tremendous plays on both ends of the court. Doesn't get tired. Goes one-on-one. Hits threes. Matches up defensively. Gets the basket. Makes great passing plays. I mean, does everything. It's flat-out amazing. Here's Brad Stevens.
It's hard to believe, but he's better than when I got into the league. A lot better. And just as you get older, you gain more experiences. You see more things. Yeah, I didn't think he could get any better after that, but he is.
Celtics tried multiple defenders on him during the course of the game, but it didn't really seem like anything worked. James talked about his mindset when he is being defended by multiple players.
You know, it's not even it's not an individual matchup for me, no matter who's in front of me. I'm just trying to, you know, my mind is always racing on, you know, how I can make us the best possession, you know, at that particular time.
Celtics lost in Game 1 in pretty convincing fashion. They're down by as many as 28 points. That came in the third quarter of play and didn't have many answers for the Cleveland Cavaliers on both the offensive and defensive ends. The game served as a bit of a reality check after a Game 7 victory on Monday night, as well as winning the draft lottery, which means the Celtics will have the top choice in the upcoming NBA draft, and their future looks bright. I talked with Celtics center Al Horford, who signed with the Celtics in the offseason in hopes that this team would not just be a contender this year, but for many years going forward.
Well, those were things that, you know, you definitely look at and you consider. And, you know, those were some of the selling points. You know, that was how, you know, when I met with Danny and you know, and Coach, those are some of the things they talked about. And that's what makes, you know, being here, it makes it even more, you know, more attractive.
As a free agent, how big of a sell, you know, is that? Is that the biggest thing? Is it the roster composition currently, cap space, city? I mean, what drives the city to come to a place like Boston?
Well, I mean, I think it's just, you know, you have to make that choice individually. It's not necessarily, you know, it's wherever the player is in their career, you know, what they want to accomplish, what they want to do, and what position they feel like they're in. And, yeah, I mean, all those things, it just depends, you know, where the player's at. I guess that's you know, not everybody's so different, you know, going through the free agency process. So
for you personally, what's the challenge of the Cleveland bigs versus, you know, the Washington bigs? Is this the biggest challenge you've faced so far?
Yeah, I mean, no question. You know, those guys are, you know, they can hurt you in many different ways. And, you know, they finish well at the rim. Obviously, Kevin Love and Fry shoot really well from the three-point line. And, you know, we really have to make sure that we're engaged to them and just making them earn, you know, all the shots that they get.
Brad mentioned you guys got to kind of stay away from scrambling on the defensive side of things. How do you do that given the type of weapons that they have?
It's tough. That's easier said than done. I mean, you know, they pose those problems as a team. You know, they can really spread you out and pick you apart. But, you know, for us, it's just making sure that we're able to individually be able to guard the ball and obviously be there to help. If we need to scramble, we'll scramble. But yeah, it's easier said than done. That's what makes them so tough. But we feel like we have the group and we have depth that we can, you know, we can do a good job of that.
I also spoke with NBA legend Chris Webber, who's part of the broadcast crew for TNT.
This seems like one of those classic NBA matchups where you have a team that has it and one that wants it. And kind of that, just kind of through the course of history, whether it's with the Celtics or you obviously with Sacramento and the Lakers, like that's always been the case.
Yeah, and if you really look at history, I'm a big Pistons fan. The Pistons had to get through the Celtics. And then they were able to, you know, the Bulls had to get through the Pistons. Well, I think what you see is a really good young team and a great culture here at the Celtics, where I think they're a couple years ahead of schedule. And I mean that positively. And I think that, you know, Cleveland is going to be their kind of big brother to go to. So it's good to see them get their playoff chops right now and be so much fun for us to watch.
It seems like LeBron's story really has a lot to do with Boston. Whether it was Cleveland, whether it was Miami, there's always that kind of back and forth. And it seems kind of fitting that once again Boston is there, and as he gets, you know, into his mid-30s now, Boston's going to be vying for what he has. And as you mentioned, it's not just this year. It seems like this is a trajectory that's going to be the story in the Eastern Conference Finals for a while.
Well, if you think about the improvement Boston has made, and then I think they're the new Toronto, meaning they're the new number two all the time. And when you can play that way, then you can concentrate on being number one. You know, you've kind of accomplished your goals. And so, yeah, I think it's only fitting here at the Garden and with this great fan base, this crowd, that you kind of have to earn your chops for history if you're LeBron. to double repeat or, you know, hey, I'd love to have these fans on my side because you can do some incredible things. So I think Isaiah and those guys are primed to do some good things.
Final thing, everybody's going to talk about obviously the stars as they do in this league with Isaiah and LeBron and Kyrie, but how big of a role are the bigs going to play in this series, the defensive rebounding, offensive rebounding, and the Celtics trying to match up with Tristan Thompson and Kevin Love?
Well, the key for this series to me is Al Horford. He's shot great from three-point line, but that means nothing. That means nothing if he doesn't handle the boards. You know, right now the Cavs average 11 offensive rebounds against this team. That's something that's really tough. So you're going to really need him. You're going to really need him to play big inside. If he doesn't play big inside, the Boston is it's going to be a tough one for him.
And the first two games, very tough for the Boston Celtics on the TD Garden floor, including that 44-point loss in Game 4. But the Celtics really turned everything around in Game 3. And this postseason has been a success for the Celtics, regardless of how things conclude. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. That segment brought to you by Revision Energy. Welcome back here on The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics. I am Chris Ryan here in the great state of New Hampshire. Matt in San Antonio, Texas. As we speak, the Spurs clawing to try to stay in their series. And again, it's been frustrating to see the injuries mount up for the Spurs and obviously for the Celtics as well. We're hoping for competitive conference finals, and certainly the Celtics have made it somewhat competitive. Still, have to win Game 4.
Oh, I don't want to cut you off, Chris, but I meant to bring this up earlier.
Oh, sorry.
Your boy coming through in the clutch,
Jonas. I wasn't going to bring it up.
Huge shot, absolutely huge.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but I've been pining for Jonas for a while, and Jonas didn't get his chance. I mean, Jonas is as you know, Matt, I am a huge fan of the super role player. And Jonas, to me, has always been that guy where he does everything right. I mean, he's not the prettiest player on earth, but he sets good screens. He makes good passes. He can hit the three-point shot. And he's tough. He's really tough.
Yeah. I mean, the whole goal of a role player is consistency. You want your coaches to know what they're going to get out of you when they put you in the game, and Jarebko fits that bill to a T. Like you said, he's tough. He's going to play hard. He's going to crash the glass. He's going to run the court. He's going to set good screens. And on top of that, he's a pretty versatile player on the offensive end. He can shoot threes. He can go to the hoop.
Mm-hmm.
So it stepped up huge for him in Game 3.
And that's the problem I have with our boy Kelly, though. I mean, Kelly is, he can either, he's 26 points, he's 0 or 2 points, he's 16 points, he turns the ball over sometimes he's making great passes, and that's one of the things, I like Kelly, and I hope Kelly, becomes that kind of consistent player, and I think we've all hoped that for a while, but that's one of the things I think the Celtics need to look at with the bench moving forward. We've talked about this, creating kind of, Paul Millsap said today he's going to opt out of his contract. We've talked about that before. I think that's a great fit for the Celtics, and I hope they sign him. And I think that they, have certain areas. They talked about Gordon Hayward and potential for him where they can upgrade. But it's going to be an interesting decision to see where they go, because they have, these guys who were number one draft choices who still kind of have to figure out where they're going to fit into the picture in the future, like Kelly. But you want to create, in my view, more definition with your bench so that you can match up. I want more guys like Jonas or Gerald Green who you can fit into certain roles, the veteran guys. And the Celtics are going to have an interesting problem with how do you mix in, those veteran niche guys with the Kellys and the Terry Rozier's and so forth.
That's a very deep, complicated question, and you're right. These are the tough decisions that the Celtics have the luxury to be making this offseason. You know what I mean? A lot of teams out there would love to have this this problem, where you have almost too much depth, too many assets, too much cap room, too many draft picks.
You're right.
That you're like trying to figure out how to maximize all that. So again, tip of the cap to Danny Ainge for putting them in this position where they get the number one seed, and then on top of that, also have the number one draft pick, cap room, and great opportunity to improve going into this offseason.
Right. I mean, the four is an easy pick. I mean, you take the best guy who's available, in my view, and you sign him or you trade for him. And he comes in and he has a big role on the team. The three, where there's a lot of chatter about Gordon Hayward, and basically it's believed by many around here to be a foregone conclusion that he's going to be the starting three next year. But then what happens to Jay Crowder? Then you have another problem, another good problem, where this guy has earned his role, and I feel he's a starting three in this league. And I don't know why other people don't see that, but you know, to me, he has proven with the percentage that he shot the ball with year.
No, he is. You're right, but if you can upgrade,
you upgrade. No, I get
take
it.
That shot,
right?
You know?
And they need to upgrade. So then, what is he going to do? You trade him, or is he happy with a role as a guy coming off the bench? And now you just bumped somebody else back. And who is that? Is that Jaylen Brown? You know what I'm saying? There's going to be such
tons of options.
Yeah, a backlog of talent, and it's going to be Danny Ainge's offseason is going to be fascinating, because I think this has to be the offseason where they go big, and they finally start to put the pieces together for a championship contending team. Right now, and if you're able to sign Millsap and Hayward, which is potential, then it looks like you'd probably keep the pick, and so you have the number one pick in the draft. And how does he fit into the mix? Again, there's a lot of really good problems for the Celtics moving forward. I had to take exception, and I want to pay homage, obviously, to the if Manu Ginobili retires tonight, after the game tonight, or whenever the Spurs Warriors series ends. I think that he deserves the credit he deserves, and is one of the greatest players of all time.
Favorite, right?
He's my all-time favorite.
Your all-time favorite.
Him and Patrick Ewing. I am the president.
Soda on him.
Yeah. No, that was Kevin Gray. That was Kevin Gray.
Oh, that was Kevin Gray.
The president of the Hampshire chapter of the Manu Ginobili fan club, and always will be. There's nothing that can happen that would dissuade that. I love Manu the person and the player. But I have to take exception to something because it wasn't factual that was in Jeff McDonald's article today, which was lauding Manu. And he said that Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and Manu Ginobili were the winningest trio in NBA history. And we all know from Boston. Now, you could say modern NBA history, but we all know around here in Boston that the winningest trio is Bill Russell and pick two guys. I mean, that is the winningest trio in NBA history. Bill Russell won 11 to 13 championships, and you can either pick Bob Cousy.
Yeah, but what two players were with him that whole run?
Nobody's with
him
the whole.
Would have
okay, well, you could do two different runs. You could do.
Then they're not the winningest.
Can I finish? Bob Cousy won five with him, and Tom Heinsohn won, I think, seven in that same time span. So you could pick those three, or you could pick. Where you could pick two different Russell eras.
But then that's only five seasons.
What does it matter? They won the winningest trio. They won more championships than Tim.
The winningest trio isn't who won the most championships.
Oh, come on.
Won the most games.
Come on. Regular season games?
That's how you would define that, yes.
Come on. Championships, man. That's all that matters. We're Boston.
Hey, then you can say this trio won the most championships. But by definition, the winningest trio is the person who won the most, games.
But all, I thought all the so matter aren't we all playing?
Don't get mad at me. That's just how.
Aren't we playing for championships?
That goes to the LeBron, Michael Jordan argument. LeBron's going to be the number one scorer in the history of the league, but he played more years. So does that mean, or not LeBron or Kareem?
Yeah.
Does that mean Kareem is the all-time leading scorer? Actually, I mean, Jordan is the all-time leading scorer because he averaged the most points? No. When you say who's the all-time leading scorer, you say Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Winning to me, it's a different argument. Winning to me is defined by championships. So if you're the winningest player, you've won the most championships. So if if whomever wins more games than Bill Russell, they're the winningest player? See what I did there? See what I did there?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So if like...
By definition, I'm not saying I agree with the definition. That's just how it's defined. Okay. So, if you want to argue with that, you need to argue with whoever defines stats or whatever in the NBA. I don't know who that
once
is.
I find, once so, I...
Write a letter to Adam Silver.
Once I find that guy or woman, they're in a heap of trouble. That's all I can say. That you can't define winningest. Like a guy could win.
You can, and it is so.
I don't think you can.
Well,
this is the great sports. This is a great sports talk argument right here. But I don't. But like some guy could win the most regular season games ever and never win a championship and be the winningest player. That doesn't make sense to me. Right.
All right. So to go to baseball, is the winningest pitcher the person who won the most games or the one who won the most championships?
Now you're making it difficult.
You see what I'm saying?
I would say that, I mean, the winningest, if you're defining it by winning games, that's different than be the winningest, in my view. If you're the winningest, that means that you're a champion. You've won the most out of anybody else. And
so that's awesome, Chris, but guess what? You don't define that. So.
I am, as of this point in time, I've given myself license.
I mean, so then, all right, I think LeBron should be the NBA's all-time leading scorer because he averaged the most points. But I mean, not LeBron, Michael Jordan.
But he's not, because he doesn't have the most points.
Exactly. That's why Bill Russell...
See, I'm saying that... Yeah.
His other two teammates were, aren't the winningest trio because they haven't won the most games.
Right. I'm saying that winningness should be defined by the postseason as opposed to the regular season. So we're having two different arguments. The regular season...
Now I agree with that because I think it's absolutely absurd that in all the NBA's statistical history books, record keeping, they don't count the postseason. It's like a separate deal.
Right. And it is. I mean, so is Major League Baseball. The postseason
but
is different.
My point is, it shouldn't... I mean, I don't know if it should be, necessarily. Like, I don't know. Like you read about... So, for example, let's say I signed a contract, and in the blurb it would be like, you know, Matt Bonner, 12-year NBA vet, he'll add experience. He has 820 career games under his belt. But in reality, I played like another 100 playoff games. But they're not going to say that, and it doesn't count. You see what I mean? Like, that to me, that doesn't make sense.
Okay, this is how I'm going to try to define this to end the argument. Are you ready? I'm going to use you as the example.
Yep.
Are you going to say in your bio, your stat line, or we could do your gravestone, but that's a little too creepy, that Matt Bonner was the fifth winningest player, we'll say, in Spurs history because he won X many regular season games? Or is it going to be above that, two-time NBA champion?
It's going to be regular season games.
No,
and I agree
it's
with
not.
You.
It's going to say two-time champion. Because that's what people care about. That's what defines winning is the postseason and winning championships.
I understand, but when you look into the Spurs program and history books, record books, whatever, it's going to be winningest Spurs, and it's going to say how many games each person on that list won, how many regular season games they won.
But that's not your epitaph.
It's not going to go by championships. I understand, but that's. You see what I'm saying, right?
I do. And I think it's...
So therefore, when you define winningest whatever, it's based off how many regular season games that person won, that duo won, that trio won, that coach won. That's what it goes by.
We got to go. But I still think that there's two separate things. The regular season and there's the postseason. And the postseason, to me, takes precedent over the regular season. So if I'm thinking winningest,
I agree with you. It should.
Then I'm thinking Bill Russell and then everybody else, and Bill Russell, Cousy, and Heinsohn, or you could say Russell, Sanders, and Sam Jones or Charmin or Casey Jones, throwing any of those guys who
you
were with
could,
him.
You could, but they didn't play together for 16 years or whatever it is. So,
right, which makes it even more impressive they won all those championships.
Hey, you're arguing to the judge or the jury or the, I forget how this thing goes, but I'm with you. I agree with you. I'm just saying that's not how it works.
That's how it rolls. Matt, as always, appreciate you joining us for the program. Talk to you again next week.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, it's The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.